Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. If you are a reader or you love someone who is, it is time to get ready. This hour, we'll get recommendations for some of the best new books for giving and receiving this holiday season from some of Iowa's fine independent booksellers. On Thursday's show, we will focus on books for young readers, but today, it's the day for us, books for grown-ups today. Jan Weissmiller and Tim Budd of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City are here. Hello, Jan.
Hi, Charity.
And hello, Tim.
Good morning, Charity.
And Kathy Magruder is also here of Page Turner's Bookstore in Indianola. Hello, Kathy.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you all so much for being here. And I want to get started. Let's start off with some fiction recommendations. And Jan, why don't you go first today?
Okay, well, I'm going to start with Marilyn Robinson's new novel, Jack, which is the fourth novel in her Gilead series. And if you've read the others, you'll know that Jack has been sort of a character, maybe not exactly the main character, but certainly a very mysterious and prominent character in all the other stories, in all the other novels. He is the son of a Presbyterian minister in Gilead, Iowa, Reverend Robert Boughton, and he's a prodigal son. And in the other novels, we know that he is often homeless, that he's often jobless, that he has a problem with alcohol, that he has had one illegitimate child, and that he then married against the law an African American woman in St. Louis. And so this is the first novel that actually focuses on him, and so we get to see things from his perspective for the first time. And it's really, I think, possibly my favorite of the four novels. And I think that's largely because it is a love story. And Jack and Della have a remarkable relationship. Very, very difficult given the barriers of the time. I think it's set in the 40s. And Della is the daughter of a black minister, the Reverend Miles, and she is a teacher, and her parents are firmly opposed to this relationship. So it's a very complicated story and very beautifully written, and actually not without humor. There's quite a lot of humor. Jack has quite a lot of humor himself, and as does Della, but nevertheless, it's a story of interracial love in the 1940s.
This is the fourth book in the series. Do you feel like it can stand alone, or do you need to have read the other ones?
No, you don't. You can read any of them without having read the other ones. It will obviously, if you have read the other ones, it will enrich your experience of it, but it isn't necessary.
All right. Jack by Marilyn Robinson. I know a lot of people are excited about that one. Tim, how about you? What's your first fiction pick of the day?
Well, I was looking at my fiction choices this morning, and four out of the five ones I've chosen are all about family, and I'm not quite sure why that is. Maybe it's just because of the times we're living in, and maybe we're all missing family. The first book I chose was Hamnet by Maggie O'Farrell, and it's just simply one of the best novels I've read this year. And Maggie O'Farrell, the author, an Irish woman, she's taken the handful of facts that we know about Shakespeare and his wife, Anne Hathaway, and has written this incredibly rich, detailed novel about their marriage, and it focuses primarily on the death of their 10-year-old son, Hamnet, who dies of unknown causes, probably the plague. So we follow their relationship from their courtship, their meeting, their initial marriage. They live with Shakespeare's family. And it's just the interplay between the two of them. She's much older than he, well, not much older, a decade older. But the details of running an Elizabethan household. And at one point, she realizes that Shakespeare is not happy there in this small town and encourages her brother to talk to Shakespeare's father, who was a glover, to send Shakespeare to London to try to sell gloves there. And of course, once there, he gets involved with theater and the rest is history. But it really focuses on Anne, who in this book is called Agnes, because that is, according to Ms. O'Farrell's research, Agnes was the name used in her father's will. So we just kind of follow her as she struggles to run a household with three children living with her in-laws while her husband is away. And I was just struck by a couple of things. One is a woman, a mother holding vigil over a child's sickbed. That, and those chapters are completely moving and just gut-wrenching. And I'm not a mother or a parent, so I, you know, it can really resonate, I think, with parents today. And also how little has changed. You know, she's, you know, you're still running the household. You're still trying to raise these children. You still try to protect them. Your husband is away working. And how do you have your own life and be your own person? They're fascinating. She's a fascinating woman, and it's a really beautifully written novel with a great ending. So.
You talked about the detail. Is this kind of a slow, long read that you want to dig into on a winter night, or what's the pace like?
Well, it's not a page turner. It's not like a thriller or a mystery. You want to savor some of this stuff because as she discusses the household chores, I mean, you're sort of fascinated. Everything is done by hand. Every scrap of food, every piece of cloth is made, you know, everything has to be done over and over again. And with children underfoot and people coming and going, you know, the business, the father's business of selling gloves is done out of the back of the house or the side of the house. So it's just a chaotic household, chickens, pigs, you know, all kinds of stuff. So it's really, you really kind of want to sink into it a little bit and kind of absorb the world they're in. And I think be astounded by how many things are universal and still apply to, you know, modern domestic life.
400 years later. All right.
Exactly.
Hamnet by Maggie O'Farrell. And Kathy, that brings us to you. What's your first fiction pick?
My first fiction pick is A Deadly Education by Naomi Novik. It's the first in a series. It is kind of an adult version of a Harry Potter book. Galadriel is a student in the Scholomance, a school for magicians, and she is destined to be an evil sorceress, and she has an affinity for mass destruction, except she doesn't want to be. She wants to be a nice, normal person. And also in the school, Orion Lake is one of those Harry Potter types. He is destined to be the White Knight and save everyone, and he's saved Elle several times, and she hates him. But she can't do anything about it because she really doesn't want to give in and be the evil sorcerer. And nobody likes her because she's one of those people that, you know, you just feel funny around. But she's this wonderful character who is trying so hard not to be the horrible person that she's destined to be. And in this book, Orion Lake saves her again for the second time, and she's decided that if he does it again, she's going to just kill him because she just can't stand it anymore. But somehow they become friends and develop an entire group of friends who discover that there's something really dark and evil going on in this school, which, of course, everybody kind of knew anyway because it's trying to kill them actively all the time. And they get together and, of course, end up winning the day by the end. But all of the characters are such interesting characters. It's a very diverse book with a lot of characters with a lot of interesting backgrounds. And they're really realistic characters. They're shy. They're funny. They are afraid to talk to other people, just like most of us are.
Well, it sounds like a great bit of escapism for the winter. And do you think an older teenager, would it be appropriate for them? Somebody else who's read all of Harry Potter and is looking for something new?
Probably. It's dark. I mean, characters die. But they do in the Harry Potter books too. So
it's true. Spoiler alert.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yep. A Deadly Education by Naomi Novik. And Jan, that brings us back around to you.
Well, I'm going to talk about Sue Miller's novel Monogamy that came out this fall, and I always read her novels whenever they come out, and I always think of them as sort of a guilty pleasure because they really are often just about a very sort of insular romantic relationship, but they're always really nuanced and deep, emotionally deep in some way. And this novel won't spoil it because it happens immediately as the novel begins. It's about a long married couple, and the husband is a bookseller, so of course that's great for me. and he owns this bookstore and is gregarious, and his wife is reticent and shy, and she's a photographer, although she's able to host these parties for these visiting writers all the time, which is nice. But anyway, he has an affair, and she doesn't know about it, and he ends it relatively quickly because he doesn't want to put his marriage in danger, and then he dies, and that all happens almost immediately. And so it's this kind of long, slow process of her discovering this secret and reassessing her entire life with him. And one of the other things, though, that's kind of interesting about it is that he had been married young and had a son with his first wife who left him and the child. And so Annie, the photographer that's his current wife, raised that son along with their daughter. But the former wife always stayed in their lives. And so it's kind of got this sort of 60s, you know, I don't know. There was something interesting about reading that. That relationship between the two wives in this novel is actually a subplot that's really quite good. But anyway, if you're a fan of Sue Miller's, I think this is actually one of her best books.
All right. So it sounds like a real page turner too.
Yeah, although she is slow. I mean, she's not. I mean, there's a lot of depth, and so it isn't really.
All
I
right.
think you savor things when you're reading it.
All right. Well, we need a lot of that this winter. Monogamy by Sue Miller. And we'll be back in just a moment with more picks for the best new books to give and receive this holiday season with Jan Weiss Miller and Tim Budd of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City and Kathy Magruder of Page Turner's Books in Indianola. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's our annual holiday books show. We're talking about the best new books to give and receive during this holiday season. And of course, we'll post this list online later today at iowapublicradio.org. We are talking about fiction, and we do have some long lists and not a lot of time, so we probably need to pick up the pace a little bit. With me, Jan Weiss Miller and Tim Budd of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City, Kathy Magruder of Page Turner's Bookstore in Indianola. And Tim, it's your turn next.
Well, my mystery pick for this season is called The Holdout by Graham Moore. This is Moore's third novel. He also won an Oscar for writing the screenplay for the Imitation Game, which was the Alan Turing movie with Benedict Cumberbatch. An excellent writer, and this deals with a high-profile murder case in L.A. An African-American defendant and a white girl was murdered from a very well-to-do family. So it's a huge media storm around this trial. And 10 years later, after the trial, the jury acquitted the defendant, much to the uproar of the national feeling about this case. So 10 years later, a TV show has gotten the jurors back together for the 10-year anniversary for a reality TV show, and one of the jurors claims that he has evidence now that was not presented in the trial that will change the whole outcome, and that juror is murdered in the hotel that night. It happens to be in our protagonist's hotel room, Maya, who served on the jury and was so impressed she's since become a defense attorney herself, and now finds herself as a murder suspect. It's a fascinating page-turner of a mystery because you really are dealing with the murder of the man in the hotel room, as well as trying to delve into the truth of the case from 10 years ago. So you get kind of a double whammy for this book. And it deals with some incredible themes about race and justice and truth and, the outcome of these trials aren't necessarily what we want, but maybe they're correct and maybe they're not correct, but it was the way it was going to go. And it's a fascinating look at kind of the legal system as well as a ripping good mystery. And, the ending, the revelations and the prizes just come, chock-a-block. And it's just really a thrilling and fun read.
All right. The Holdout by Graham Moore. And Kathy, that brings us back to you.
Well, my mystery pick is The Mountains Wild by Sarah Stuart Taylor. The main character is Maggie Darcy. 20 years ago, her cousin went missing in Ireland, and Maggie left Long Island and their family to aid in the search. Aaron was never found, but Maggie found her calling and became a police detective and has spent the last 20 years in Long Island being a detective. Well, someone has come up with some new evidence in Aaron's case, and so Maggie goes back to Ireland to revisit both her past and the investigation and all of the people she met 20 years ago. It's a really interesting, nuanced story. I compare it a little to the Louise Penny books, which are just excellent. Fun read. I really enjoyed it.
All right. The Mountains Wild by Sarah Stuart Taylor. And Jan, that brings us back to you.
Well, I don't have a mystery pick because I don't generally read mysteries, but my book, my choice, The Boy in the Field by Margot Livesey, is really a mystery, even though it's a literary. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So this book takes place in England. She is Scottish. Margot is Scottish, although she lives here now. But it takes place in a small town just outside of Oxford. And there are three siblings in this family, Matthew, Duncan, and Zoe. And one morning when they're walking to school, they encounter a boy in a field who's bloody and unconscious. And so there is this mystery that continues throughout the entire novel about who brutally attacked this boy. But really what it's about is how it changes the lives of these three young people. And they can't look at the world anymore the way they had. And so all these sort of little fractures start to appear in both their lives. Zoe is a teenage girl, and so the kinds of problems that she develops, the psychological problems that she develops based on this are ones that are common to young girls, but they're overshadowed by this kind of horror that they encountered. And the youngest boy is adopted, and he suddenly becomes obsessed with finding his birth parents and with knowing the mystery of his birth, which makes his parents' marriage start to feel less settled than it had. And throughout all this, they still continue to look for the perpetrator of the crime. So it's actually a very interesting psychological study in how violence affects a family. And I do think that, even though this is a white family, it, at the time that I'm reading this or at the time that we're living in now, we have to think about the kind of, racial violence that mm-hmm. we've been witnessing all summer and how that impacts people in ways that we don't see on the news.
Yeah, the long-term effects. The Boy in the Field by Margot Livesey. And that brings us back to you, Tim.
Well, my next choice is Everywhere You Don't Belong by Gabriel Bump. It's such a great name, Gabriel Bump. This is a first novel. Gabriel Bump is from the south side of Chicago, and it's a coming-of-age novel where we follow our little hero, Claude McKay Love, and we follow him from about 5 years old all the way to his freshman year in college. And it is just a family story. The mother and father, Claude's mother and father, disappear. The mother leaves first when he's about three or four, and the father follows suit. So he's raised by his grandmother, who's just a tough old lady from a civil rights activist, and the other person in the house is Paul, a friend of hers who was also part of the civil rights era. Paul has a drinking problem, but these two quirky characters raise this little boy, and it is different from some of these other coming-of-age novels because there is so much humor in it, although it is contrasted with some terrible tragedies. There is a young boy is killed by the police, and there riots ensue for days. And some of the protesters are killed or shot or imprisoned or go missing, and it just kind of turns their neighborhood upside down. But at the same time, he's got a grandmother there who is encouraging him to be the man he's supposed to be and to fight the good fight. But you will laugh out loud at some of it, at their kitchen table conversations. The dialogue is fantastic. And at the same time, you're just struck with, how hard it is to raise a young black man in the United States today, and what he goes through to even get to college and be the man he wants to be. But it's a really great first novel, and I look forward to more from this writer.
Everywhere You Don't Belong by Gabriel Bump. I know there's a lot of buzz around this one. Kathy, what's next on your list?
Next on my list is another first novel, but this is a novel by a local author from Des Moines, Rick Van Etten, The Killer in the Woods. The main character is Robert Vance, a magazine editor from Des Moines. Quiet guy, quiet life, except secretly he's also an ethical hitman who takes clients who need help with injustice or from bullies. And it starts out in a deer hunt in the woods in Iowa. But something happens. One of his victims, someone else gets charged with a crime. And because he is an ethical hitman, he can't let somebody else get charged with murder for something that he's done. So he has to go back in, investigate, and try to prove that the person who is being charged with murder didn't do it, while at the same time not get charged with murder himself. Fun
tricky
book.
Yeah. All right. The Killer in the Woods by Rick Van Etten, a local author. And Jan, we're back around to you.
Well, I'm going to do one that I actually didn't put on my list because
Because you can't resist.
Yeah, because I found it in the stack of things I read in the last few months, and I remembered how much I liked it. And it's Roddy Doyle, the Irish writer Roddy Doyle, whose most famous book, the Booker Prize-winning book, is Paddy Clark, Ha Ha Ha. But this new book is called Love, and it's been compared to The Dubliners. It's although I thought of it sort of as Beckett Light, too, because it's just two characters, Davy and Joe, and it takes place over the course of just a few days. Davy's living in England, and he's in his 50s. His kids are grown, and his father's dying, and so he comes back to Dublin, and Joe is still there, living there, and so it sort of switches back and forth between Davy's time with his father during his last days, and his time in the pub with Joe, sort of rehashing their marriages and their lives. And Joe has recently left his wife of long standing for this woman that they had both been in love with when they were in their 20s. But more than about the plot, it's about how men communicate. It's really quite remarkable. I mean, to read it as a woman because they aren't direct. They get angry if they get too close to an emotional complexity, and then they come back at it, and it isn't unemotional, and it isn't uncommunicative, but it's very different than the way two women would talk over a glass of wine. And it goes, and there is a mystery in it, because Joe will not really tell Davy why he disrupted his relatively happy marriage for this woman, Jessica, because it doesn't really have to do with unrequited love from
you know, young adulthood. It has to do with some secret that she has that we never discover.
Never discover. An unrequited mystery as well.
Yeah.
All right. Love by Roddy Doyle. And Tim, it's your turn again.
Well, I'd like to talk about Shuggy Bane by Douglas Stewart. It just recently won the Booker Prize, and so I was anxious to read it. And this is a sort of an epic family saga spanning 10 years from Shuggy, who is the youngest child in this family, from a 5-year-old till the time he's about 15. And it is set in, Margaret Thatcher's Britain in the 80s in Glasgow, Scotland. And, you know, it's a very dysfunctional working class family. The mother is very glamorous, looks like Elizabeth Taylor, but has a severe drinking problem. And the father drives a cab and is on the night shift and is a bit of a philanderer and often very absent. The two older children from the mother's previous marriage can't wait to get out of the house. And we just sort of follow Shuggy as he's the last one left with his mother in the house, trying to desperately keep her sober and take care of the house. I mean, since the age of 7, he's been getting himself ready for school and making his own breakfast. It is somewhat depressing because these are people with very few choices who make a lot of bad mistakes. But they're somehow, and I can't quite figure out how the author does this, is that you don't hate these people. You are given, you know, they're presented to you warts and all, and they have redeeming qualities and they have severe flaws. And it is not entirely without hope, but it is a wrenching read. And, what I liked about it is that you don't see families like this kind of, you know, told often in novels. And it is a tough read in many ways, but also gives you an opportunity to experience a life, you know, that is probably very different from your own. It's a very compulsive, you have to keep reading. You can't put it down. It's a neat trick.
Wow. Well, Tim, I'm not sold. I don't think I could deal with this kind of despair this winter. But
well, you know, and it is not for everybody, I will say that. But he writes really well, and just the kind of inner tickings of these people's thoughts and minds. And you know, they are petty, but sometimes they have great nobility, and it's just people trying to get by the best they can.
Maybe I'll save it for summer when the sun is shining.
Maybe so.
All right. Shuggy Bane by Douglas Stewart. And Kathy, back to you.
Well, the book I've got next is not actually new, but there's a reason for rereading this again. It's The News of the World by Paulette Giles, and it's coming out as a movie with Tom Hanks in the lead. In this book, it's set after the Civil War. The main character, Captain Jefferson Kyle Kidd, which is a wonderful name, is a 70-some-odd-year-old man who's been through the last two wars, lost his method of income. He used to be a printer, and now he travels around and reads the news of the world from the newspaper to people who don't have newspapers in their towns. And he is offered $50 to bring a young girl, 10-year-old girl, back to her family. She's been raised, captured and raised by the Kiowa for the last 6 years. And this is very much about family and developing and building your own family. I didn't expect to love it as much as I did, but these are the kind of characters who stick with you and really become part of your family, too. I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with the movie.
All right, News of the World by Paulette Giles. And all right, we've got about a minute and a half left before the break. Why don't each of you give me just a fiction title and the briefest description, and maybe we'll get through these before we go to the break. Dan?
Well, I'm going to talk about Shelter in Place by David Levitt. It's set the weekend. It begins the weekend after the 2016 election with these sort of upper class New Yorkers who are at the country home of one of them in Connecticut, and the main character, sort of the main character, Eva, comes from a background of Holocaust survivors, and she's, you know, it's a comedy of manners and it's somewhat funny, but she that doesn't sound funny, but it is. And she decides to buy a dilapidated house in Venice and sort of in order to get out of this country during the Trump administration. And it's actually quite funny.
All right. Shelter in Place by David Lovett. And Tim, we'll get your 30-second review in here, and then Kathy, you can do one after the break. But Tim, give us a quick one.
The House in the Cerulean Sea by T.J. Klune. This is a total escapist fantasy about sort of an Orwellian 1984 bureaucratic world. Linus Baker, our hero, is a caseworker who goes around and studies orphanages and schools that that take care of magical youth. And in the process of going to the very worst school on a special assignment, he begins to loosen up and then find a family that he didn't even know he needed. So it's a very uplifting, very heartwarming, a lovely escapist novel.
All right, I am sold on that one.
Yeah, it's a very fun book.
The House in the Cerulean Sea by T.J. Klune. We'll be back in just a moment with more recommendations for some of the best new books to give and receive this holiday season with Jan Weissmiller and Tim Budd of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City and Kathy Magruder of Page Turner's Bookstore in Indianola. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the best new books for giving and receiving this holiday season. With me, Jan Weissmiller and Tim Budd of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City and Kathy Magruder of Page Turner's Books in Indianola. And Kathy, we're going to get your last fiction pick, and then we're going to move on to nonfiction. And Jan, I know you have a poetry pick you want to share, and we'll try to make our way through this. Of course, time is growing short. Kathy, can you give us a brief fiction recommendation?
I sure can. Ready Player Two by Ernest Cline is a sequel to Ready Player One. Wade Watts, hero of the first book, discovers that there is something more in the Easter eggs in the vaults, and that's really all you need to know.
All right. Again, highly anticipated book, Ready Player Two by Ernest Cline. And Jan, let's talk poetry.
Well, I have the Library of America has put together the African American poet, a collection of African American poetry from 250 years, and it's edited by Kevin Young, who's I think he is currently the poetry editor of the New Yorker, and he's also a highly highly acclaimed American poet. He actually read for Mission Creek last spring, and the reading was held at Prairie Lights, and it was one of those amazing evenings. And this is a really thorough book. It begins with poems that were written when African Americans were still in bondage. It starts in 1770, and it goes through right now. And so it's got a wonderful long introduction by Kevin Young, and it will introduce you to African American poets that you would not have known of. I mean, we're familiar, obviously, with Gwendolyn Brooks and Langston Hughes and Lucille Clifton, and then more contemporary African American poets that have been winning a lot of prizes recently. But there are poets here that one would never know of without picking up this book, and they're just remarkable voices. And it's so important to feel the history of the music in black poetry and how it's influenced so much of the rest of our poetry. And I think this is just a book that has been necessary for a long time, and it's very well done, and I just really can't say enough about it.
Yeah, it sounds essential. So African-American Poetry, 250 Years of Struggle and Song, edited by Kevin Young. And let's do a nonfiction pick from you, Tim. What have you got?
Well, the first one I'll pick, and Jan and I both love this book, and I don't know if it's on Jan's list as well, but it's a double endorsement, is A Wealth of Pigeons, a cartoon collection by Harry Bliss and Steve Martin. And Harry Bliss is a cartoonist for The New Yorker, and of course Steve Martin's name is fairly well known to your listeners, I'm sure. And they are just some of the funniest cartoons ever. I mean, and when they came in the store, we just ran around showing them to each other and hooting with laughter. I can't really talk about it because it's a visual thing, but
right.
All I can say is that it is much needed medicine for this time, and they are just some of the funniest cartoons since Gary Larson's Far Side.
All right. A Wealth of Pigeons, a cartoon collection by Harry Bliss and Steve Martin. And Jan doesn't have that one on her list, but Tim and Kathy, the two of you, do share one. I always love it when there's a double pick because that feels like a double recommendation to me. Kathy, would you start us off by talking about the Call Me Ishmael phone book?
I'm so glad you're starting because I don't know how to really describe this book. So thank you for taking the burden off me.
Yeah, I've got to say, this one is a little hard to describe. This is an interactive phone book of everything literary. There are lists of all of the bookstores in each state, along with their phone numbers. And then there are also these interactive guides for specific books, Mark Twain House and Museum, Ravenkind Bookshop, The Catcher in the Rye. You call a phone number and enter in an extension, and you get either a chance to leave information or an opinion or someone else's something. I mean, there are so many different things in this book, and I've never seen anything like this before. We were looking through it one day and found Page Turner's bookstore in here, and my staff was bouncing around saying, "We're famous, we're famous."
Well,
but
it sounds
like one of these books you just open up to a page and there's something interesting there.
All right, it sounds like there hasn't been anything quite like this before. Tim, did you want to add anything?
Well, it's designed like an old-fashioned phone book, so like the Yellow Pages. So you have listings, and books are listed by states if the author is from there or if the book takes place there. But there's also ads for real places like literary landmarks or bookstores. And there also are fake ads that are just as hysterical. There's one for a prom rental place that has blood red gowns and fiery tuxedos, call and ask for Carrie. So there's really funny ads, there's real places, there's listings, and then you call this number, you dial the extension, and you get impressions from people who have read this book and what it meant to them. And so, and you can also leave messages about books you want. There are ads in there that saying, you know, we want to hear from you if you've read such and such a book or had such and such an experience. And I've called it and I've listened to them and they're great fun. And people don't tell you like the plot of the book or anything like that. They're just talking about the impact the book had on them at that particular time when they read it. And it is just sort of fascinating to hear how these books have impacted other people's lives. And you think about it, how it's impacted yours. And it covers everything from Dr. Seuss to, they have one listing called hard to read books. So you can look under there, or overrated books, or, you know, scary books, monster books. I mean, it's all kind of wacky and everything is cross-referenced. It's not a toll-free number. So, but it does, once you listen to an extension, it'll take you back to the prompt and you can listen to more. And I think if you just open it up and put the speakerphone on, you'll have a lot of fun.
Oh, wow. Well, it sounds fascinating and also just a wonderful way to connect right now at a time when connection can be a little bit hard to come by.
Exactly. And you'd be surprised how moving some of these messages are. I mean, some of these books have impacted people in ways that change their life. And it's kind of miraculous to hear some of these stories.
Fascinating. The Call Me Ishmael phone book, an interactive guide to life-changing books by Stephanie Kent and Logan Smalley, on both Kathy and Tim's lists. And Jan, back to you. What would you like to talk about in nonfiction?
I am and will, if I get another chance, talk about Cast by Isabel Wilkerson, but maybe because of the Call Me Ishmael phone book, which has some maybe tangential relevance to this massive biography of Abraham Lincoln by Dave Reynolds and David Reynolds. David Reynolds wrote, he writes what are called cultural biographies because he just goes through all the popular culture and high culture and history, things that were in the papers and going on at the time that Whitman or
Lincoln were alive, and shows how those things influenced them. And he's a wonderful, wonderful writer. And so I read, when I was reading about this book, I read that there are 16,000 books on Abraham Lincoln. They're wow. The only historical figure that has been written about more is Jesus. And but this book is new, and because it brings so much of the sort of grotesqueness actually of the time, Barnum and you know all these kinds of things into Lincoln's sphere. But he also read obviously a lot. I mean, he read Shakespeare and Euclid, and you know, he had 1 year of education, and he could move so easily between the common sort of, you know, folk culture and the high culture, and it's really just a remarkable book, and it is a book that you don't have to read cover to cover. I mean, it obviously talks a lot about his about how he was able to get us through the Civil War and the compromises he had to make to do so, but it really gives you a sense of this country that isn't in other books about Lincoln.
Interesting. So maybe a life-changing book for people who pick it up. Abraham Lincoln in His Times by David Reynolds. We've got 6 minutes left. Tim, can you briefly tell us about another one of your nonfiction picks?
Well, I will choose one that I think is very timely, Apollo's Arrow by Nicholas A. Christakis. And it is a book about the current coronavirus pandemic. Nicholas Christakis directs the Human Nature Lab at Yale University, and they look at a lot of different things, a lot of human behavior as it, you know, whether it's famine or natural disasters or disease, or this is kind of what they study. And it is just very a sobering look at the pandemic and how much it will affect us. And he gives you the background of the disease. He compares it to other pandemics in the past. These always happen in human existence, and they almost always change our society in very dramatic ways. And he wrote this over the summer when he was in lockdown. And he, of course, you know, there's been the vaccines and things that have been happening, so he's not completely up to date. But it really gives you a very thorough background and, you know, some hard looks at maybe how this pandemic is going to affect us much longer in the future than we might think.
Interesting.
It's a tough read, but it's gripping.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe we need one volume that kind of lays it all out there for us, you know, and gives us the whole story.
Certainly something we've all been thinking a lot about.
Right.
Apollo's
right.
Arrow, The Profound and Enduring Impact of Coronavirus on the Way We Live by Nicholas Christakis. And Kathy, another nonfiction pick from you.
Oh, I think everybody needs a travel book right now. So my travel book is Clan Lands by Sam Heughan and Graham McTavish. They're two actors from the Outlander show. And they're very, very good friends, and they decide to travel around Scotland and visit distilleries and Scottish history sites in a minivan camper. And they are obviously really good friends. They're very, very funny. They keep breaking into each other's narratives in the book. And surprisingly enough, they're both really into Scottish history and can give you the backgrounds of the massacre at Culloden. But fun book, really fun listening to the two characters interact. They are just really interesting, funny people.
All right, and obviously a bestseller, I'm sure, mm-hmm. with as
yes.
popular as Outlander is. Clan Lands, Whiskey Warfare, and a Scottish Adventure Like No Other by Sam Heughan and Graham McTavish. And Jan, now you can talk about Cast.
Yeah, Cast is the new book by Isabel Wilkerson, and she's the prize-winning author of Warmth of Other Suns, which is about the Great Migration from, you know, the South to the North in the 1920s of African Americans. But this book, she She talks about how the economic basis of slavery and how, you know, we needed it. It was not just the South that needed it to keep the country economically stable in the beginning. And so in order to sort of to have a social order that was based on torture, we had to sort of look at the people that we were torturing as untouchable. And it's a hard read, but on the other hand, she writes really well. I mean, The Warmth of Other Suns is just an amazing book if you haven't read it, and as is Cast. She writes really well, and I sort of liken her to Bryan Stevenson, who wrote Just Mercy and has been a pioneer in the social justice field. But both of them allow one to look at the harshest reality and still feel hope, still feel that, you know, seeing it and understanding it is the way to get through it. And so hard as this book is to read, I think one can read it without feeling blamed, but just feeling deeply understanding.
Cast by Isabel Wilkerson. You're giving us a number of essential books this hour, Jan. All right, we've got about 3 minutes left. Tim, can you briefly tell us about another nonfiction book?
The last one I'll choose is A Shimmer of Joy, 100 Children's Picture Books by Chris Locher. And Chris Locher is a historian and antiquarian bookseller, and she's just assembled basically a reference book of 100 picture books for kids that she thinks are collectible, are worthwhile, and groundbreaking. The first one is Beatrix Potter's Tale of Peter Rabbit in 1901, leading up to 2015, and The Last Stop on Market Street by Matt De La Pena and Christian Robinson. And she's, you know, she gives you a little essay about the writers or the illustrators and why this book is important. She also looks at some of these books that have become politically incorrect now after many years. But she's showing them just because of, you know, it's really a reference book for adults to enjoy. It's not really a kid's book, but there are lovely illustrations in there from the books, and she even went and found first editions of all of these books. So some of them, you can see little thumbprints from little readers on some of the sides of the pages. But it's a great walk down memory lane, and I'm always amazed at how long some of these books have been around. I mean, my God, you know, the 40s or 50s, and they're still selling like hotcakes to the kids of today.
All right. A Shimmer of Joy, 100 Children's Picture Books by Chris Locher. And you get the last word today, Kathy. Would you tell us about novel advice, though? This just sounds hilarious.
Sure.
All right.
Okay, imagine that there's this fantasy universe where Aunt Antigone is an advice columnist to all of the characters in fiction. For instance, she gives advice to Ophelia or Emma Woodhouse or Dr. Watson or Long John Silver about what's going on in their books. All of the characters are disguised, so you don't really know which one they are unless you read the table of contents in the beginning. But it's what a delightful idea.
Yeah, no, it sounds like so much fun. And we are out of time. But that is Novel Advice, Practical Wisdom for Your Favorite Literary Characters, a humor book by Jay Bushman. Kathy Magruder, thank you so much.
Thanks, Charity.
Jan Weissmiller and Tim Budd, thank you both.
Thank you, Charity.
Thanks.
And of course, we will talk about children's books on Thursday. And once you've made your list, please shop local if you possibly can. This is Talk of Iowa.